I planted seeds and lettuce and flowers and plants.
The main difference between the food in the supermarket and the food we grow is that the farmers have become detached from the community.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Okay, my name is Rodrigo Venturelli. I'm a farmer at Plan B Organic Farm in West Flamborough. We've been farming for about 5-6 years. The main difference between the food in the supermarket and the food we grow is that the farmers have become detached from the community. So there's a large group of people that take that food, store it, and then sort of distribute it to the people that need it instead of the farmers being able to directly, you know, deal with the community. There's people actually making a lot of money and therefore lowering the quality of the food, you know, keeping it for too long, you know, and in doing so, because of that and many other reasons, we have to buy our food in from far away, and there's nowhere to store it other than these huge supermarkets, and because it's from far away, it's been on the shelf for very long, and the quality isn't that good. The way we distribute food is we bring it into town. We grow it all ourselves on the farm. We get the food together, we bring it into the city ourselves, and then the people come to a certain area on the day, just hours after we get it there, hours after we harvest it actually, they are actually picking the food up at different depots in the city, from here right to Toronto, and taking it to their home. So a few hours after we grow it, they're eating it, mm-hmm. instead of weeks after it's been grown far away. Usually the seed takes a while, needs water, and needs the right temperature in the soil for that to sprout. And that can take sometimes up to 3 weeks. And then from then it takes anywhere from 50 to 120 days, depending on the types of crops. The leafy stuff takes less, and then the hard root crops and you know, squash, melon, stuff like that, and take pretty much the whole season. Like if you go any further north from here, you can't grow big watermelons. There's just not enough time. We're as far north as we can be.
Okay. Could we survive on food grown only in this area, like over winter, for example?
Yes. Yeah, everything else survives. I mean, if we weren't here, there'd be a lot more fauna, animals, all kinds of animals, you know, living off this climate, and we're no different. You know, we do things differently, and we're weird. Humans are weird. And then we kind of destroy our world, and then we pretend that we can live here. You know, if we didn't destroy it, we'd be able to live here. But since we have destroyed it, it becomes very tricky, you know, to do so. Like you can't go out and wildcraft nuts from the forest anymore because all the nut trees are gone. You know, and the natural fruits and all the berries, they're all gone. The perennial edible greens, they're very hard to find. You know, wild crafting is sort of a thing of the past. We use a big tractor with a big shovel in the front. It's a lot of fun. We use a little tractor. The big tractor carries the compost out into the fields, and it prepares the beds. So that we can go out there and seed. It also helps seed. it does a lot of the work. Without a tractor, you'd be very hard pressed to do any sort of, you know, anything to scale, any larger farm operation. And then we use a little tractor to cultivate, to go between the plants and weed. Kind of goes like this, like a big fork through the fields. And then vans, and we have a manure spreader. We have a disc or something that gets pulled by the tractor that chops everything up, puts it back in the soil. We have a plow we don't use too much, which kind of like takes the soil and inverts it on itself. It's kind of harsh for the land. Farming is actually, it's very hard on the land. You know, we destroy it, and then we create as generously and as effectively and environmentally friendly as we can. We create another environment where we can grow food for ourselves. But ideally, we would just let things go. We would introduce native species that we could eat and slowly, you know, eat that way. But we're kind of new at it. We have planted a lot of trees, and in the future we will do things a little differently. But right now we got to go in there with these big machines and destroy it to create our food. And what's happened is that because people don't farm properly, and because we've put pavement over the whole world, the land has died, or has, for the most part, and there's no life in the soil. Like, and under this grass here, there isn't much going on. It doesn't breathe much, you know. We've kind of covered these fields with grass. Wherever you see grass, there's no diversity. So therefore, there might be one or two little creatures around, but it's not open for others to come in. And every time people come in, or creatures come in to try and make a home, like even a dandelion, we rip it out. And so for the most part, the land in all over the world has been, because it's been farmed poorly, for other reasons, it doesn't hold water anymore. And contrary to what we believe, it actually rains from the ground up. You know, the water gets pulled out of the land and then it's deposited just down the way. And if there is no water in the land, like there are droughts all over the world and fires burning all over, it has nowhere to drop it. That's why it doesn't rain. It's because there's no water in the soil.
I planted seeds and lettuce and flowers and plants. Waiting, you have to have a screwdriver, a sharp screwdriver, and then dig it into the grass, and then there you see a hole, a muddy hole, and then you put it inside it.
You put the seed in it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you pat it like flowers, and then you put water on it, and then it grows bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. First, you let the berries grow, and then when they're finished growing and ripe, then you come to the forest and eat them with other people.
Hello, my name is Evelina. We've planted carrots and beets and zucchinis and peas. They're already growing. And there's one radish and one zucchini which we took home. Cucumber, lettuce. There's a beautiful big bunch. And the radishes, there's probably radishes coming up. If you're making it yourself, then you have to turn the grass up, you have to dig up the grass and turn it upside down so the mud's sticking up and the grass is underneath. And do that for a long, long, long time. And then you chop it up. And then after that, then you plant the seed and water them. They grow and grow and grow. Their drink is water and their meal is sunshine. So they have to have a drink and they have to have some food. And also, they need rain. They can have rain sometimes. So if you don't have a rain barrel, you might not have hose, so you get water from rain. Rain is real, is where all water comes from, how all the ponds started and everything.
Oats and beans and barley grow.
Oats and beans and barley grow, oats and beans and barley grow. You or I or anyone know how oats and beans and barley grow. Well, first the farmer plants the seeds, stands up tall and takes his ease, stamps his feet and claps his hands and turns around to view his land. Oats and beans and barley grow, oats and beans and barley grow. Do you or I or anyone know how oats and beans and barley grow? Then the farmer watches the ground, watches the sunshine all around, stamps his feet and claps his hands and turns around to view his land. Oats and beans and barley grow, oats and beans and barley grow. You or I or anyone know how oats and beans and barley grow.
My name is Ryan Kraftcheck, and I've been working for the last 4 years on a local business called Garden Cycles, which is a garden-based business up here on Governor's Road in Dundas. And the focus of the garden is to produce organic vegetables, herbs, and flowers for the local community. And it's a community-shared agriculture garden, so community members support us as growers by paying up front at the beginning of the season in faith and in finances that throughout the season they'll have a share in the harvest from our garden. So whatever we grow in season, they receive a weekly share of that bounty. Our garden is about a half to three quarters of an acre in cultivation. We use a specific method where we try to cultivate the soil very deeply so that we can space our plants pretty close together. It's called biointensive gardening, and that allows us to produce quite a bit of food in that small space. And we grow a variety of things close together, and they provide either benefits to one another or they are used as deterrents for certain pests. So we try to grow types of vegetables that you may not find in your local grocer, because as you may know, there's numerous types of certain vegetables. For instance, a tomato, you may know the shiny red variety of tomato that you see at the grocery store, but there's actually striped green and white tomatoes, there's purple tomatoes, black tomatoes, yellow tomatoes. So we select from the variety and we try to mix it up a little bit so it's interesting. We grow root vegetables, so beets and potatoes and carrots, and we grow leaf vegetables like lettuces and spinach and chard, and we grow fruiting vegetables like tomatoes and squashes and peppers and things like that. So the list is more extensive than that, but we try to have a variety of things that we can grow in this climate, in this locality, and have it be, a taste of what local produce can be like. And it's growing in season, so you're not going to get tomatoes and peppers in early May and June like you might find at the grocery store, because in this climate you just can't produce that without the aid of greenhouses and that kind of structure. Most of our cultivation or the preparing of the land is done using hand tools. We don't have tractors, or we have had use of a rototiller in the past, but we tend not to use the machinery. We use hand tools, so we'll cultivate the soil with shovels, with forks, with rakes. There is always work to do, especially if you're doing it with hand tools. The bonus of working with hand tools is you're more intimately connected with the land, in my opinion. I'm playing in the dirt most of the time and seeing what's happening. I can hear the birds. I can see the frog or the snake that I'm about to, you know, step on, as opposed to just driving over it with a tractor or a tiller or something like that. So it's a more human scale, but having laborers is important, having people to help out. And we do organize days when people can come out and help. It's great to have socialization in the garden and sharing, because it's a fun experience. You know, people like to get away and be out in the garden. And a lot of the process is the preparation. So I would say almost 80% of the time we're preparing the land, and what goes into that is the labor of turning the soil and cultivating a garden bed, which is finally prepared so that we could sow seeds or transplant seedlings that we've grown in flats. And what we do is we have a variety of approaches. One is to turn the soil over and break it up and then rake it. Another is to use what's called a broad fork. It's a specialized tool that turns the soil even deeper than you might get with a regular shovel. And we use that, and then we break up the soil and rake the seedbed. And once the garden beds have been prepared, then we'll sow our seeds, water them in, make sure that they're nurtured to the point where they can have been established in the garden bed, and then to a certain extent we leave it up to nature from that point, with providing us with rain and the sunshine that we need. So our approach is a more ecologically based approach. So we take into account that these what are called pests exist in our garden, and we try to outsmart the pests in ways. So there is a variety of techniques we use. One is to move the crops around our garden so that these flying pests or these jumping insects can't just easily find the host plant or the plant that they like to eat or lay their eggs on. It's been moved to a different location. So that crop rotation is something that we use. And it's not only the upper part of the plants that deter the pests, but also often these pests live in the soil and in the refuse or the dead leaves around the soil. So we'll try to clean up our garden beds after we've cultivated and taken the plants out. Another way is we just use our hands, the tools that we were given. We seek out the pests and either pick them off the plants or try to disrupt their life cycle by finding their eggs and removing them from the garden. Other ways, we just try to cultivate a really healthy soil by incorporating compost, by selecting varieties of plants that might be resistant to certain pests. And there's a motto with organic gardening that, you know, a healthy soil produces a healthy plant. So we work a lot on developing healthy soil. We grow crops that specifically feed the soil microorganisms, so that each time we pull out a vegetable from the garden, we're removing nutrients or elements from the soil. So we try to replenish the soil with other plants that we grow to bring back those nutrients, in plants that can draw up nutrients from either deeper in the ground or sequester or grab them from the air, such as legumes. So there's a number of techniques. We do spray, but not chemicals in our garden. What we'll spray is we can make a tea out of compost. So that's providing, again, nutrients to the plant, but in a different way than from the soil. They would take the nutrients that they in the spray that lands on their leaves and pull those in to the plant. And we might concoct a cocktail of tea out of different plants that we find in the garden that have specific elements like iron or phosphorus, different things like that. So we try to mix it up a lot, and it's a bit about being creative and a lot about being observant and knowing what's happening in the garden. Every year provides a different challenge. different insights. And for us, pesticides isn't the answer. It's more the challenge of working with what is in nature as opposed to killing off what's in nature.
The farmer John and the farmer Jane, with the help of the sun and the falling rain, they're growing it right, naturally. Using the ways both the tried and true, like Grandma and Grandpa used to do, growing our food naturally. Well, it looks so good and it tastes good too. How do they do what they do, do, do? They're growing it right, naturally. They grow the appleest apples and the beaniest beans, the yellowest yellows and the greeniest greens, the yummiest yams that you ever did see, and the corniest corn. In the compost pile, nature turns it all worthwhile. Make a good soil naturally. Now see that soil with a good manure, it's a living and it's so darn pure. Feed the earth naturally. Oh, the good bugs chase the pests away, in the deep of night, in the light of day, guarding our food naturally. We've got the tastiest, juiciest, scrumptious, the yummiest, oh so good, from your mouth to your tummiest, fruitiest fruit that you ever did see, and the corniest corn,
and the cranniest cram, berries that is,
oh very funny. Now the farmer John and the farmer Jane, with the help of the sun and the falling rain, they're growing it right, naturally. Now they're using the ways both the tried and true, like Grandma Grandpa used to do, growing our food naturally. They're doing it right, naturally. They're growing our food naturally. Oh, the bitiest bites, yummiest yums, grubbiest grub, pianiest piani, bassiest bass, silliest song, corniest corn,
and the cranniest cram, berries that is.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I got the dandelion leaves in this dandelion leaf place where there's all these dandelion leaves, and I pick them and I help my mommy put them in a bowl. You pick dandelion leaves with your hand and then you put it in a bowl and then you chop it up and put lemon on it. And oil and salt and juicy. I make it very juicy and stir it around and around and around. You add other lettuces in it and then mix it again.
I'm Ann Robinson. We're at the East Plains United Church.
I'm Gail Lormer from Burlington and from this church. We have some justice and peace walkers. We've heard that there might be as many as 40-ish walkers, so we've prepared a feast for a whole bunch of walkers who are walking for justice and peace. And in particular, they're trying to highlight people who have been put in jail without charges since September 11th. And some repressive laws that are coming into Canada and being looked at, making it very much harsher for refugees and immigrants to come here to Canada.
So what did you do for today's, what did you prepare for today?
Well, we know...
We just emptied our fridges.
Well, we made a lot of vegetarian stuff. In fact, mostly everything was vegetarian. All we had was some turkey slices and all the cold foods. And then there was some hot stuff like lentil stew. Which has a lot of vegetables in it, and a rice dish mm-hmm. that was made by a man. Mm-hmm. It was wild rice, and what else is in it? Curry?
Rose petals and saffron.
Rose petals, yeah.
Over several days, a number of us prepared food for today's feast to make sure that our justice and peace walkers were well fortified before they went on their walk again. Okay. And lots of drinks, too. Lots of cold drinks. And one hot tea that is organic and fairly traded.
And we spent the morning here just setting up and getting ready and enjoying the conversation with everybody who came. Because we don't often get together with like-minded people. So around the tables is the thing to do, the place to do it. I guess walking, too.
I want to let you know that Gail and Jackie and Anne and have been working 2 days to prepare this wonderful feast for us.
Thank you.
Together, we're not only going to end racism, but we're also going to spring all the people who are unjustly imprisoned in this country because of their racial background, their religious faith, or because of their economic scarcity. So,
a supermarket in California. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman. For I walked down the side streets under the trees with a headache, self-conscious, looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket dreaming of your enumerations. What peaches and what penumbras. Whole family shopping at night. Aisles full of husbands, wives in the avocados, babies in the tomatoes. And you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelons? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price bananas? Are you my angel? I wandered in and out of the brilliant stacks of cans, following you and followed in my imagination by the store detective. We strode down the open corridors together, in our solitary fancy, tasting artichokes, possessing every frozen delicacy, and never passing the cashier. Where are we going, Walt Whitman? The doors close in an hour. Which way does your beard point tonight? I touch your book and dream of our odyssey in the supermarket and feel absurd. Will we walk all night through solitary streets? The trees add shade to shade, lights out in the houses. We'll both be lonely. Will we stroll dreaming of the lost America of love past blue automobiles and driveways home to our silent cottage? Dear father, gray beard, lonely old courage teacher, what America did you have when Sharon quit poling his ferry and you got out on a smoking bank and stood watching the boat disappear on the black waters of Lethe?
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.